vision. The company claims that Leap is 200 times more sensitive than current gesture-based tech, able to track movements down to a hundredth of a millimeter. Users will be able to fine-tune the sensitivity, Leap says, because a hundredth of a millimeter is more than most of us will ever need for any sort of sensitivity of the sort. The camera, which is about the size of a business card holder, can discern all 10 of your fingers individually and even tell your thumbs apart. Such detailed scanning lets you perform action like pinch to zoom or zero in on fine details in a drawing app. It all sounds a little too good to be true, especially for a device that costs a mere $69.99. You heard me right, $70. The company even acknowledges how far-fetched it sounds on its webpage. Leap's goals are anything but humble. The device is all about changing the world by making interaction with computers more natural and intuitive. Can't wait to try it out? Well, you're going to have to. The controller doesn't go on sale until the winter, but you can pre-order one now. The company is also accepting requests for developer kits, which should be available in the next few months. So our question to you at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is do you want to control your computer with gestures? And the choices are absolutely. How cool would that be? If it were really useful, sure. And there's only one gesture I use with my computer. So far, we've had 35 people answer the poll, and not shockingly, 57% of you say there's only one gesture I use with my computer. But I know you are going to have more to say about it. So if you click the yellow box underneath the poll and click on Give Us Your Opinion, it will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
And the poll is, the question there is, what app or program would you like to control with gestures first? Keep it clean. So far, not a lot of real response to that one, but we'll see. And of course, you should always give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
There have been people that have hacked the Kinect to work with Mac and Windows, and it's kind of interesting, you know, waving your arms in front of something. It's sort of the in-between a touchscreen and complete voice control.
Right. The real problem with any of that stuff is the human part.
Those darn humans.
Those darn humans. The reality is this. I spent, as many of you know, I spent 20 years as a professional actor. And for a good piece of that time, I was a puppeteer. And if you think holding your arms out in front of you for 8 hours a day is easy and making all those gestures is simple and intuitive, you're very wrong. For an hour, half an hour, even a couple of hours eventually, but try sitting all day with your hands out in front of you and doing all of that stuff.
For quick gestures, I find myself, and I hear this from a lot of people too, we're used to our touch tablets and our touch phones. I'll try to touch the screen on the laptop or the desktop, and it doesn't work.
Right.
So maybe for a quick gesture, but yeah, holding your arms, you know, gorilla arms, they've been calling it. We don't want that.
Right. And over on the IRC chat, Chris Reich has said the obvious useful gesture would be to switch desktops with a flourish, of course. And he's right. I mean, that for some quick things, you might use it for that. But I really don't see a fully gesturized interface being something people will use.
Except for gaming.
Except for gaming. And even so, you're going to find that people are going to fairly quickly run out of energy for those first weeks.
That was one of the big backgrounds we heard when Nintendo Wii first came out, and they said it again with the Kinect. It gets the kids up off the couch and moving. No, they're sitting dead on the couch and their wrist is flicking back and forth. So no, they aren't getting up and moving.
Right. So now they've got with the Kinect, you've got the whole body controller, so you can actually do some sort. Oh wow. Very nice. All right?
That scared me.
Steve just tripped over his own headset. And unless you get some very weird idea, he didn't have it on his head at the time. He was going over to fix the adjustment on the Ustream. We do Ustream our shows, so you can see us. Hi there. How are you? And he was getting up to do that, and he had taken his headset off, but then he tripped over it. And
sort of like, you know, my big fat Greek wedding.
Yes.
I still love it. I've done that before.
We've all done it before.
Here in the studio one night, Thursday night, I forgot I didn't have my folks see us on the camera. I've got a long tether on this headset. Well, on the other one that my IFB that I use on Thursday nights, which is a lot easier because I'm answering the phone, I accidentally walked away from it thinking it had longer to get over to the other side of the counter, and it sort of ripped my ear because it wraps around and goes in your ear.
Yep.
It's like, oh,
and most of the time we're just sitting here at the mic, so the headphone cable needs to be 3 feet.
Yeah, right.
And it's 120 feet long.
Right, right.
Like I say, it's good for what I do, you know what I mean? Being
right.
Able to move around.
But over here, there's this tangle of power cord and ear headset cord and
network cables.
Network cables and mouse cord and everything else.
I had a wireless mouse I was going to bring. I forgot it.
Oh, just an FYI for folks, since it is Memorial Day.
It is Memorial Day.
And to go along with that, since we're popping off things to, you know, talk about and that, I'm going to pop off, we'll save it for the second hour of an Uncle Dave Story Hour.
Yep.
This one, I could hardly contain myself.
All right, can't wait. Yeah. And we do want to remember all the veterans.
Yes, I was going to say, my fellow vets that are out there that have served, are serving.
Or will serve.
Yep, and will soon serve. Matter of fact, my nephew, he's coming home. So I'm really excited
That's
about
very
that.
Exciting.
He's going to be home. I haven't seen him in about 3 years. And he's now got a little daughter. His wife and them are bringing up their daughter. So we're having a picnic tomorrow. So that should be good to see them. Along with one other thing that I got to mention is the Trot for Troops.
Yep.
Going to be doing that tomorrow.
Yep, you'll be in the flag line.
Yep, flag line for the Trots for Troops.
Can't say it, but he's going to be there.
I'll be there, yep. No, we did the honor flight last week. Oh, that was tear-wrenching. I mean, you get some of these vets that are coming back.
Yeah, no kidding.
And we're standing there, and we had 62 folks show up for the flag line. And these people, their eyes just, because they come off the elevator, you know, they never got that.
Yeah, yeah.
But to be sit there, and this one gentleman, like you say, his tears started coming down his eyes, and he is the 1,000th person to go on honor flight from here from Rochester.
Nice.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a good organization welcoming, you know, properly those folks that gave up so much.
It's the way it should be.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember any cadences that are suitable for air?
Yeah.
I was in the Marine Corps.
None of them were suitable for air.
All I remember is some of them we'd get up. Well, being woke up, you know, talking about military days, I remember the first few days at Paris Island, we'd get woke up. The lights would come on, flash, you know, because it's like 5 o'clock in the morning. The lights would come flashing on, and the DI had a trash can, and he threw it down the length of the squad bay, yelling, you know, ladies, get up, get up, get up, get up, get up, get up. You know, your first couple of days there, it's like, oh. You slept sort of on top of your bunk with your eyes just glued. Is it time yet? Is it time yet? I think we psyched.
So was it more like Full Metal Jacket or Stripes?
Yeah.
Gunny Ermey's on a new commercial now for Victory Motorcycles.
Is. Yeah, he's on a couple of them, as a matter of fact. Yep. He's doing one for Pistachios, too, as a matter of fact.
Yep.
Yeah, he glares at it and it pops open.
Yeah. But to get back to this gesture thing, do me a favor. Those of you who have tablets, prop them up in front of you and try working on them for 8 hours. Not down where you can touch it, rest your elbows, whatever, but actually, you know, working on it for an entire day, your hands get tired.
This isn't the same Leap company that does the kids' games, is it?
No, that's LeapFrog. This is
just Leap.
This is Leap Motion. It could be related, but they named themselves because they're taking a leap in interface.
Yep.
So
I thought he had it cool in here. 67. It's nice.
It is. It's nice in here.
Finally, have air conditioning in the studio, folks.
Other shows complain that it's too cold, and we're always too warm.
Well, there's three of us. A couple of us are pretty big guys, so yeah.
Well, it gets warm in here. Rob likes to do when he does his show, and I take over. He's got this track lighting on, which to me that gives off more heat.
Yep.
But he comes in, and, you know, he's got it, the mood lighting, and it's like, turn on the fluorescence.
Well, I finally turned the air conditioning on in my computer room yesterday.
So did I.
It was up over 80.
Oh, one thing I would like to mention, got to meet a few of the folks Thursday night for Art Loves Jazz, Artisan Works. It was a fantastic turnout. Thank you for all you folks that did come out and stop by and said hello. And we had a number of folks that are Soundbite fans, and they are so happy that, you know, we are here. They go, we thought we lost you for a while there. No. We maybe missed a couple weeks, but no, we went from one right to here, and we've been here now for 3 years. And remember, we start our fourth year this June. I do believe it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. June 5th we started.
Yeah.
So we'll start our fourth year here, and, you know, it's just great to be here, and it was nice to...
I unfortunately had... End of the school year. There was no way I was going to be anywhere but at work. Mm. Fairly late. So that's a separate story altogether.
No, yeah, but no. Wow, what a turn. That place is unbelievable.
Yeah, it really is.
I turned around and go down this one aisle, because there's literally rooms after room. And here it is, two scale, a Ford pickup truck in wood.
Yeah.
All in wood. Tires, the engine, everything. It was really cool. The one thing I would really love to have and hang it in my shop was this pistol. There is this pistol. The thing had to be about, I want to say, three and a half foot long, you know, with the snub nose barrel. And it had where you could see the bullets inside. And it had to be, I bet you a good 2.5-3 foot tall. And
in wood?
All in wood, in different woods, and it had to be thick, I'd say 1.5 to 2 foot.
Yeah.
I'd say more 2 foot.
A revolver?
Yes, it was hanging on the wall. It was so cool. I'm thinking, now that would be fun to have in the shop, hanging on the wall. Don't mess with us.
That's right.
This is a lethal weapon.
That's right.
They just won't know how.
Right. You drop it on them.
Yeah, exactly.
That's pretty much what you have to do.
They, Top Shot, one episode this season, they were using the 50 caliber Magnum pistol. 50 cal is usually the giant gun that you put on top of trucks. But
yeah.
Smith & Wesson has a pistol version of it. And they were firing, and you could sit, and one of the contestants, Gabby, was a Venezuelan Olympic shooter.
Yeah.
And she was so tiny, and that gun was just so huge in her hand. It was the most powerful handgun in the world.
Most powerful handgun, right? Back when the 44 Magnum was the most powerful. But yeah, that's a fun show. They use lots of interesting guns, and
I got a kick out of the guy that lost one of the challenges was a grenadier, world champion grenadier, and he lost on a grenade launcher.
Yeah, he did. He's a world champion, and that's what he lost on. And the guy who won is a self-taught shooter.
Yeah, it was an IT guy, right?
The guy who won last year was a self-taught shooter. Yep. He ran last... Yeah, this guy was an IT guy. The guy the year before...
Golf pro.
No, he was a Christian camp counselor.
Yes, right, Christian camp. Yeah, the golf pro got really high on the list.
Yeah.
Well, which almost makes sense, because the champion shooters are really good at their weapon. Not necessarily all weapons.
Well, except, of course, for that guy.
Yeah.
The Grenadier. All right, listen, we're going to take a break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Maybe we'll even talk about some computer stuff. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And we'll be back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 19 minutes after the hour, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enner.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Despite the late Steve Jobs' mockery of a stylus, Apple has been tinkering with the notion of an iPen complete with haptic feedback. That's according to a newly published patent application unearthed by enthusiast site Patently Apple. Apple's idea for an iPen would include haptic feedback to improve the user interface. Users would feel a small vibration depending on how much pressure they applied to the stylus or whether the stylus moved over a link on the screen, creating a more realistic experience. It could also vary depending on the angle of the stylus, orientation to the screen, and how quickly it is moving. In addition, the iPen could include a speaker that simulates sounds of brush or pen strokes. The sounds would rise or lower in volume depending on the pressure applied. A stylus would be useful for the iPad, but could be applied to other touch screen devices such as the iPhone or iPod Touch. While Jobs has famously decried the use of stylus on mobile devices, several apps have sprung up that require such a device for accurate drawing and writing. Paper and Autodesk's Sketchbook are two popular apps ideally suited for a stylus rather than a finger. Gaming is another area where a stylus may come in handy. Of course, Apple files patents applications for technology that it may never use in commercial products. The patent was originally filed in the fourth quarter of 2010 and was made public by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office earlier this week. So, an Apple stylus, good idea or hellacious blasphemy? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415.
I was going to say, also jumping in on there, folks, if you know, I know it's a nice day in that. If they're out and about and have a particular question and they're listening on the radio, you can also text us. And you can text us at 585-209-9010. I got the screen up, and we can answer your questions there also.
Perfect.
I'm going to say that the picture from their patent drawing looks like a missile.
Yeah.
With all the electronic components and the lines.
Right. Well,
but
we
sell a lot of styluses to artists.
Yes.
Because it just works better for drawing. But I use a stylus with my iPod because my fingers are big and I have trouble hitting the small keys.
But most of the styli that I've seen also have big caps on the end.
There are a few of them with smaller tips, but the part of the problem is the way the capacitance sensor works.
Right.
You need enough space for the conducting, you know, capacitance to work. But there's one that we sell, the Pogo Sketch Pro, that actually comes with two tips. You get a fine tip and a wider tip. And there's one that I've read about that I haven't quite seen yet that actually is a brush. And each of the little bristles of the brush is also enough of a sensor so that you can get true brush strokes out
right.
of it.
This particular patent looks like it's got a very pointy tip.
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
See, there has to be two contacts on the sensor, on the touchscreen sensor, to make the electrical
right,
connection
right.
between them. So
right.
you're kind of limited on how small it can be.
Right.
But yeah, for painting and brushing and graphics things, it does make a little bit easier to use a stylus. Although, you know, we started out finger painting when we were children.
Well, there certainly is that. But I've seen some very high-end art done on an iPad, and
yep.
I find it difficult to believe that they got that fine line, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's the tool. You may be using a big finger, but the tool is a fine line.
Yeah. All right, off to the phones, and our first caller is our friend Scott from Buffalo, New York. Hello, Scott. How are you today?
I just came back from Radio Shack. I was sent to Radio Shack from the Apple store, and Radio Shack told me to go back to the Apple store. I'm looking for I guess it's a cord whose with a male end and a female end. The male end plugs into the docking part of my iPod. The female end would plug into another plugs into a stereo I have to play the iPod off of.
Oh, so you're looking essentially just for an iPad to stereo audio cable.
That's right. See, I have a very nice cover on my iPod. If I plug it directly into the stereo player, I have to take the cover off. I'm trying to avoid doing that.
Yeah.
Right.
There's two ways you can do it. Radio Shack would have a mini stereo to RCA connections. Do you know if your stereo is using RCA or mini stereo?
Well, it has the male part of the iPod docking thing on it.
Oh, your stereo has an iPod dock.
Yeah.
Oh, you just want a docking extension cable.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. We sell those in our store, but it doesn't help you much in Buffalo.
Yeah, I know the Apple Store didn't have them.
Yeah. Yeah, we have extension cables.
And Radio Shack didn't have them either.
Yeah.
So that's what I would look for online, I guess.
Yeah, an iPod dock extension cable. Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
I get it. I see what you're looking for. That's very cool.
We have these little tiny. Well, yeah.
I just bought a new iPod Classic, and I have now plugged it into my iTunes, and nothing's happening. Now, is that because the battery is very low, or what?
It could be that it may take a while for the battery to charge if it's too low. Does the screen on the iPod say that it's charging?
It's plugged in right now, so let's see. Yes, it says connected just before disconnecting, but I don't see it in iTunes anymore now.
Try quitting and relaunching iTunes. That helps, or maybe even rebooting the computer.
All right.
Or just wait a while for the thing to charge up. It may have been so dead. Right, that it didn't actually register at all, and now that it's charging, it just hasn't seen it.
Right. Oh, and, I rebooted iTunes, losing your show, which I don't have to listen to now. I rebooted iTunes. It's now working.
There you go. Excellent. Yep.
Thank you.
And back to your first question for a minute. Yeah. I can see the box on our shelf. It's an orange box.
Okay.
It's just a little 1-inch docking extension plug. It's not even a cable, just a plug, specifically intended for this type of purpose. When the iPod with your case on doesn't fit in the docking connector, so it raises it up about 1 inch and gives you enough of a connection.
Excellent!
I can't remember the brand offhand, but I can see it in my mind sitting right on the shelf. We have them in black and white because iPods are in black and white, and they come from Germany. And I remember that because it took a long time to get them to come in. I'll send a note to my office and see if we can remember the brand of them. But you can get regular docking extension cables that they're usually like 3 feet long, 10 feet long, something like that. But this little tiny 1-inch one we usually sell to people in your situation who just need a little bit longer cable to get outside of their case.
Right. Well, thank you very much.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, Scott.
Yeah, bye.
And that reminds me to tell you that don't forget tomorrow, 9 p.m., we'll be in Second Life answering questions and having – we have fun in Second Life on Sunday nights. We really do. So if you're a Second Lifer, please feel free to join us. It's 6 p.m. Linden time, 9 p.m. Eastern time.
That's the brand, Send Station.
Send Station.
Sorry I missed last week. At 5 after 10, Shirley says, weren't you supposed to do Second Life?
Yeah! I've set a reminder. My computer.
I've got two reminders, but I didn't have my
text message every time.
I didn't have my iPad open, which watching TV, I have to have the iPad open, researching stuff, IMDb,
sure,
TV.com.
Yeah, it's hard to watch television nowadays without IMDb.
We were catching up on past episodes of Grimm, so I had to look up the German words. Zalbetrunk is the new one we learned this week.
Zalbetrunk? Is this something we can say on the air?
Yeah. It's the recipe for a witch's potion.
Oh, okay.
You used to send out reminders for that. I stopped getting them.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll send them out if you want me to.
I'll give you an email address because it'll come right to my phone.
Perfect. I actually am just sending them as text messages.
That'll work.
Yeah, because I just have Google Voice send them directly as a text message.
Okay. Well, you got that.
Yeah, I got that.
So you just send it right to my phone, and then yes. I admit I got craft.
Oh yeah, we're getting there. We're getting there. I actually also wrote myself a little program that. Is not ready for prime time, but I use it all the time. It's I can send myself a reminder, set a time and a date, and it'll text me at that time and date with that message. So and I've got it on my phone now, so that I can actually it's still a website, but it's a mobile app.
Okay, because as I say, I do that in Google Calendar.
Right, right.
Set things
right.
up to remind
right.
me
right.
this and that, and you can set up, you know, how often, how far in advance.
Yep.
Love Google.
Yeah, Google does it. Google, Google does it all. Google does
Drive.
It all.
All
and,
stuff.
Yeah, that really, I use it more often than I used to, and it's pretty cool. I mean, I wrote this thing mostly because I just wanted to play around with the Google Voice.
Well, that
API
was
API is really the only reason I wrote it, but because you can do it all better with Google Voice.
I had a situation pop up, and I had to prove something. In the document, I backed up. I knew that, and in my ultimate wisdom, had also put it up in the Google Drive. I said, wait a minute. And I had my tablet. Dun, dun, dun. Here you go. Read.
Yep.
Oh. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
thank you.
When the iPhones first came out as the first real easy-to-use web smartphone, we always called it the Barbet winner.
Yep.
Who was the guy that ran for 600 yards in that three games? Here.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, and what they're finding now is an interesting thing is happening with Google, which, of course, has to do with Siri. And Siri doesn't send anything to Google, and even if it did, you wouldn't see any of the ads. So Google is of course, bringing out their own Siri-like device, Siri-like app. It'll be interesting to see what happens. There's already Eva and Vlingo. I use Vlingo all the time on my phone. But theoretically, Google I.O. is coming right up, and I'll be interested in seeing what the Google. It used to be, it was codenamed Majel, which was, you know, Majel Barrett, who mm-hmm. was the who was Gene Roddenberry's wife and the voice of the computers on Star Trek. For everything but the original series. And
no, even the original, too.
Was she?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, she
just
was.
Just more mechanicalized.
Right.
All the Federation computers.
Right. Only the Federation. Right. And so they codenamed it Majel, but of course they're engineers, so when it comes out, it'll just be called Google Assistant, which I think is kind of stupid. Except, of course, there's probably they would have had to pay somebody
to use
Majel Barrett's name, yeah. So it'll be called Google Assistant, and I have high friends in low places at Google, and they say it's astonishing. And of course, they're working on it, so okay. But
yeah.
Still, they say it's quite astonishing. And the problem with all of those, of course, is that they take up data, because those things mostly don't work in your computer. A mm-hmm. few things do. If you were to ask it to play a song, that would happen right inside your computer. If you ask it to do anything else, particularly if it's a fairly involved thing, it mm-hmm. sends the voice, a wave file essentially, a recording of what you asked, to Google's computers, which turn it into text and figure out what it is you want to do, and send the reply back to either Siri, because Apple does it exactly the same way, either Siri or Assistant. And so you end up using a lot of data to add, you know, particularly when you spend all day going, Siri, will you marry me? Siri, how old are you? Siri, you know, whatever. Okay, it's cute, but the fact is you're eating up your data plan. Mm-hmm. And right. for those who don't have an unlimited data plan anymore, that's a real problem. So there's a lot of controversy about these things as well, mainly because a lot of people are interested in this stuff, but they no longer have all-you-can-eat data plans.
And that's where a lot of folks have to get in the habit of searching for wireless. When they're out and about, I wind up getting so much free wireless wherever I am because, you know, it's all over the place. Everybody, they've got it open up so we can get to the internet. And I can just sit there and search and do all I want, and it doesn't eat up anything on my data plan.
Yeah.
Because I'm going wireless. One of the other apps that I like, that I use a lot, it's called Places.
Mm-hmm.
And I use the app. Matter of fact, I was out with dinner with a friend last night, wanted to look up something. Went, all right. Pulled out the phone, typed it in. Said, better give them a call, see if they're open. Boom, just tap it on the screen.
Yeah.
Don't you have to punch in the number? No, it's right here. Boom. Found out, oh, they're already close. Oh, all right, we'll go to Plan B.
Yep.
And
so I'm going to open a restaurant called Plan B.
Yeah.
It'll be open till like 5 in the morning.
There you go. When Plan A fails, check out Plan B.
Exactly. I've spoken before about what I call my iPod, right? My old Android phone, which no longer works as a phone, but still does everything else. So I've turned it into essentially an iPod equivalent. And obviously Wi-Fi still works, and I'm amazed at the number of places I can find free Wi-Fi there, too. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. You can call us at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. As we continue with more Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we are having trouble getting to the internet. Interesting. I don't quite know what happened. We'll figure it out at some point.
It was working earlier. The stream looks like it's running. Mm-hmm. The audio stream, the video stream is down because I can't get to the internet.
Yeah, I can't either, and I don't know quite what happened. We're both plugged in. It's clearly not our machines because it's happening to both of us simultaneously. But we'll figure it out as we go along in between phone calls, like we've got one right now from Riley from Webster, New York. Welcome, Riley. What's your question?
I am a former employee of a very large computer company. I was laid off after 35 years. I'd like to work for myself. I'd like to provide internet websites for small and medium business and individuals, and use my photography for input and video and do multimedia presentations, things like that. As far as you guys are concerned, is that a viable business at this point in time, or is that day past?
Well, that's a very good question. There are a lot of people I know, who are writing web pages these days.
Yeah.
So you do need to bring something extra. Now, the ability to bring your photography and videography to the table can actually help considerably.
Integrate it with it, yeah.
Yep.
For years, we were trying at my office, we were trying to get the coders who can write really, really good code and the advertising agencies who can make things look really pretty to work together. Because you can get some really great code on a crappy-looking website, or you can find a website that looks really pretty, but it's really slow and has crappy code behind it. So finding that mix between good coders and good designers seems to be where the biggest niches are.
Okay. The only other thing I didn't mention is I'm 59. I have a retirement. I have medical benefits. So I don't have to make a lot of money, and I want to do something that I like, and I want to do something for myself, and I don't have to make $1 million. So I'm thinking that it is probably viable at this point in time.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you could do that. That would absolutely be a possibility, particularly if you're charging a little less than other people. The first thing, of course, in order to do that, you need your own fairly kick-butt website so that you can demonstrate your capabilities.
Okay. Yeah, I'll just let you in on two other things that are pretty interesting. RIT is allowing people to take courses at 40% of the regular price if you have been laid off and have worked in the Rochester area for a year. You don't get to register until the last minute, so you don't get any of the full classes, but you can get classes at RIT for 40% as a dislocated worker. And also, the unemployment office has a program called SEAP, Self-Employment AP, and they will give you 26 weeks of unemployment if you devote 40% or, 40 hours a week to finding a job and a business of your own. And they ask you to get involved with the Small Business Administration and have a mentor who signs off on your participating in that program.
Very
it's all
nice.
Good stuff for people who want to work for themselves and open a business.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Yep.
Perfect.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks,
Riley, and good luck.
Yep.
Yeah, a lot of folks have I know a lot of people who have started web businesses, and most of them are earning some money. The big thing, of course, is you got to have a gimmick. That's true for stripping, and it's true for websites. Riley has the ability to add photography and to add videography, and that's always a help, particularly if you're artistry is there, you know, if the photography is artistic and
a little
et cetera,
extra niche.
Yeah. That's the kind of thing that would be absolutely useful. Mm-hmm. All right. Our next caller is Jim from Fairport. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Hi, thanks. Nick, you mentioned once that you would use entries in a host file to speed up or block out the DNS for certain advertising domain names like DoubleClick and stuff. I wonder if you could recite, you know, what you have in your list, or it's a very clever idea, or maybe put a link up on your website that has a list that I could paste or put into that host file to just block out those entries. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I will look into doing that. That's a very good idea. And I will look into that. It changes pretty regularly as I watch things happen, and I find myself waiting and waiting and waiting for stuff. It just makes me insane. And I do run my own website, so I can direct stuff to my website. So I come back. What is that noise that's going on? Is that wind? Oh, I see. It's probably wind. So I often find, pot them down a bit, won't you please? Because that's just very annoying. I find that having some place to actually go to and coming back with a 404 page is better than having nowhere to go to.
One of the things that I do is I run a program called Ghostery that blocks a lot of those ad sites and extra things even before they get to your computer. So it blocks it from trying to load, which can make your pages load a lot faster. Although I have found on some pages they won't work at all if the ads don't load, because that's what pays for the website is the ads.
Right.
Okay.
Anything like that will really help out, like Yahoo Mail or anything like that. If you have the time to put up a link, thank you.
All right, thanks. I will look through my various lists and put some stuff up.
Yeah, it was kind of difficult trying to see if he was responding to us, but blinking out that noise.
Yeah.
Cell phone in the car, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where
yeah, exactly. It really does look like the internet here is down, so I won't be able to keep track of any of the stuff. Talk for a minute. I'm going to get my...
One thing we should mention again, you know... our hats from all three of us go off to all, again, you veterans. And if you can, you know, get out. I know there's a number of parades going on and different events going on. And we can't say thank you enough. You know, too often we get wrapped around, oh, yes, this is a day, you know, this is a long weekend and we can go and picnic and do this and do that because I got 3 days off of work and this and that. And we soon forget what it's actually all about. And Memorial Day, which, you know, I found out a while ago, but just kind of refreshed my memory, actually started right here in New York State in Waterloo.
Yeah, right after the Civil War. It was Decoration Day set out by some of the brides, Civil War widows.
And New York State was the one that first turned around and made it official to honor the vets.
A Memorial Day specifically for the fallen veterans.
Yep. And it started right. So one holiday here that we celebrate across all the U.S. started right here in New York State, which, it's kind of unique. Well, I mean, besides having high taxes get a little and everything else.
Yeah. We get a little advantage because we were one of the first states. But
yeah.
Well, we are, of course, the... They often talk about how, you know, we had Susan B. Anthony and getting out the vote and all of that other stuff. Of course, we're also the city where the Fox sisters started the whole craze of occultism. So we do it all here.
Arthur Shawcross. And
yeah, exactly.
Wide gamut of topics and celebrities and infamous.
One of the people who is suspected of having been Jack the Ripper is buried in Mount Hope Cemetery. So is Francis Marcellus Church, who wrote Yes, Virginia, There Is a Santa Claus.
Washington
so is
Carver.
Ralph Bellamy. Washington Carver is here. Francis Bellamy, who wrote the Star Spangled Banner. A bunch of famous people are buried here.
Well, there's a great tour that you can take, I believe, during the summer months at Mount Hope Cemetery. I actually saw where Mount Hope actually is.
Yeah, that used to be...
It's this little mound, and it's called Mount Hope.
And it used to be so far away from the city, they didn't think there'd be a problem putting a cemetery that far away from the city.
Well, I had heard a while back, and it probably still holds true, that there are more people buried in Mount Hope Cemetery than live in the actual city of Rochester.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
That's sort of been a staple in horror movies for years, that the dead outnumber the living by a wide margin.
And the weird thing, though, is when I lived over in over on Roby, which is right there near Elmwood Ave, off of my house faced Elmwood Ave, at night you'd see the crows flying towards the cemetery. Uh-huh. And they'd be coming from all directions, and they'd be headed towards the cemetery. Whoa.
Uh-huh.
You could go there and right and just hear the chatter from within the cemetery of all these crows hanging out in the cemetery.
Yep.
Makes you wonder.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Yep.
Why? Why did they do that?
Oh, did it come back? No. This webpage is not available. All right. Let me read another email, another news item. When you use Siri, where we already talked a little bit about some of this, voice data are sent back to Apple servers in order to be processed. But the information is also stored there for a period of time to help hone the voice assistant. IBM seems to be a little spooked by this and has begun blocking the use of Siri on its private networks in the fear that sensitive information may wind up in the wrong hands. Call it being cautious or maybe paranoid, but IBM CIO Jeanette Horan confirmed that the use of Siri was blocked on its network. Data are stored on Apple servers after being processed, and IBM doesn't want any information being extracted from said data. Apple doesn't say how long data are stored for either, or who will be able to access them, so maybe IBM is better off being safe. The company also blocks cloud applications like Dropbox and iCloud for similar security concerns. Edward Renbeck, the lead developer for the original Siri app for iPhone, said that privacy was was always a hot topic. Just having it known that you're at a certain customer's location might be a violation of a non-disclosure agreement. However, he doesn't feel that it's as big an issue as some would make it out to be. People are already doing things on these mobile devices. Maybe Siri makes their life a little bit easier, but it's not exactly opening up a new avenue that wasn't there before. So, do you worry about privacy when using Siri or Dropbox or iCloud? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. And yeah, somebody come over here and reboot the internet for Webster, will you?
Yeah, because I've got it.
For Greece, I mean.
For here, I can't even get out. I was trying to get off
the board. Yeah, it's all done.
What's interesting is that the audio stream seems to be working because the count is still up.
I don't know.
Which means that computer at least is getting on the internet.
No, that's just telling us that we're generating. It doesn't mean that we're...
No, that's how many connected streams there are outside of the building.
That number can be stuck to.
Yeah, exactly.
So it doesn't
doesn't
go down. Yeah.
So I don't know.
Because the internal network is working. We can ping the router. We can ping the DNS. We just can't get past the router.
Oh, and it also wants to do an update on the log me in.
Yeah. And if assuming Rob is not paddling around in his dinghy, maybe he would be coming in here to reboot some sort of.
It's probably something in the school district, not the
yeah,
actual
probably
computer.
Is.
But going back to the privacy issue, we were just talking on a podcast I was listening to the other day. Your cell phone is basically a GPS tracker.
Yep.
Even the ones that really don't have an actual GPS chip in it, because the cell phone is always looking for a tower, telling the cell network, "Here I am. Here's my phone number. You can ring me if you need to." And we see that in cop shows now all the time, that's how they track the bad guys, is by tracking their cell phones. But that's how you can track the good guys, too. And there's apps for finding friends near you, finding your phone if you've lost it. So when you give one to your children, you can track where they are.
Yep.
But, so your cell phone is basically a tracking device anyway. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They were talking about like a national chain like Starbucks. You walk into a Starbucks and your phone joins their network. Their network administrator knows it. And then you go into another Starbucks, they know you're there. You go into another one, they know you're there. So, you know, wherever you go, they know you're there.
Yep.
And there's just such a huge volume of data that probably no one's looking through it. But they can.
Well, and they certainly can. And of course, the problem everybody is trying to solve right now is big data. You've got all these data now. How do you manage them? How do you extract information from them that's useful to you? You know, we've been seeing that for the longest time. When you get in a grocery store, you get their key card.
Yep.
They're showing you stuff. They're giving you things because they want more information from you.
There was a case in the news a few weeks ago that hit a lot of the tech blogs that Target started sending pregnancy-related coupon stuff to a teenager because her shopping data had recognized she was buying pregnancy test kits, she was buying diapers or whatever, and now suddenly you're tagged as moving into this new demographic, we'll send you some new coupons. And the startling thing was that Target knew it before her parents did.
Right. Well, I get, for years I've bought things on the internet for my wife, for my daughter. And so the internet really has no freaking idea what's up with me. I buy dresses. I buy shoes. I buy Disney videos.
I get romance novels.
Yeah, I saw you in a dress, so it wouldn't surprise me that you bought a dress.
I've got great gams. We're going to take a break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour, and you've got a whole nother hour of sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. So you stay tuned. Make sure you're listening because we're going to be back and bringing you more news, more views, more things to use. No more blues. We can't get on the internet, so I don't quite know what I'm going to do about that. But for the rest of it, we'll be here doing whatever it is we do for the next hour. And you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415. Member supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we have internet back. Yay! So I'm very excited. Who knows how long it'll last? We'll see.
I'm still not back.
It's a long weekend. It wanted to take it off, too.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, we were back for a second, but I don't know if anybody's talking on the IRC chat, so I can't tell whether we're back or not. But in the meantime, I'll read another news story. Microsoft requested that Google remove over 500,000 links from its search index in April, according to the most recent figures released by Google. Google's data show that most of these links would send people to websites that sell pirated Microsoft software, so it makes plenty of sense for Microsoft to ask Google to kindly ensure such links end up relegated to the dustbin of history. According to Google, today we're expanding the transparency report to a new section on copyright. Specifically, we're disclosing the number of requests we get from copyright owners and the organizations that represent them to remove Google search results because they allegedly link to infringed content. We're starting with search because we remove more results in response to copyright removal notices than for any other reason. So we're providing information about who sends us copyright removal notices, how often, on behalf of which copyright owners, and for which websites. As policymakers and internet users around the world consider the pros and cons of different proposals to address the problem of online copyright infringement, we hope these data will contribute to the discussion. And this is all very interesting, but it should be noted that although Google has been requested to take down all those links, they are all still very much alive and kicking over at Microsoft's very own Bing search engine. So I guess the moral here is that if you want a law-abiding site, go to Google, but if you want pirated software, go to Bing. So who even uses Bing anymore? Anyone?
I never.
Anyone?
Anyone Microsoft Bueller? Pays.
Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
You can usually tell on television what the Microsoft paid sponsorships are. Hawaii Five-O is a big one because they focus the camera right on the Microsoft logo, or they specifically say, let's Bing that, or let's put it on our SkyDrive. It's like they, Microsoft has to pay people to use their stuff, which, I don't know. It's pretty.
Well, it's advertising. Bing, that's what it's about.
Yeah, Bing is pretty. I don't know if I like the results as much as Google, but it's pretty.
Yeah, I'll stick with Google. I know that'll still be around, whereas Microsoft, on a drop of the hat, can drop anything they want. It's not worth our effort, so there you go.
Yeah, you're right.
Hung out to dry again.
The big problem with this copyright removal is that there's no real mechanism for saying, no, it's not a copyright violation. That happens on YouTube all the time. People put up content, and it gets taken down for copyright notice. We hear that from Lee Laporte in his Twit network all the time. He's a news and review site, and he plays a clip of something that they're reviewing or talking about, which is completely under fair use, and YouTube gets it taken down. Because it's a lot of the automatic mechanisms for takedowns, but there's no one to complain to that said that shouldn't be taken down.
Right. There was a story this week of some guy who requested that some site take down a copyrighted photograph of his, and now the person who runs that site is suing him.
Yeah.
And it's just going to be a huge mess.
Well, and it was the mess with YouTube and Mega Upload, where Mega Upload commissioned their own song from artists independently of those artist labels and put it on their site for distribution, and they got a takedown notice from the label, even though the label didn't have the right to do it.
Right.
And so it got taken down and put back up and taken down. And then Mega Upload ran into other problems, but
Mega Upload.
99% of their stuff turned out, yes, it was piracy, but in that one case, it wasn't. They paid for it and commissioned it, and it was legal.
Right. Well, you know, we were talking about this a couple of weeks ago. I have this great, great album called When Pigs Fly, and it's got songs like Unforgettable with Ani DiFranco and Jackie Chan.
Ooh, cool.
Singing this thing, and it's very cool. And Don Ho singing Shock the Monkey, and just it's a very weird, funny, terrific album. But I wondered if the people who did it got all the releases from everybody and all the other stuff that they need, and so they have copyright to those songs. But if I got permission from them to put one of those on my site, would I then?
Yep.
Get sued by somebody else. I don't know. I don't
probably.
Know how that works. I'm not a lawyer. I have a friend who is. I have a very good friend who is a very good lawyer. I should probably talk to him about it.
There have been several cases where people have complained and after the fact about having a birthday party at a movie theater and you're taking pictures of your party. The movie can be seen in the background of the picture.
Right.
You are violating copyright.
Right.
And ushers come and confiscate the camera.
Right. It's an interesting. When I used to do reviews of movies that hadn't opened yet, I would go to the theater, and they would stop me and say, "Do you have a camera? No. Do you have a phone with a camera? No. I know enough to leave it in the car for previews.
Yep.
But a lot of people got turned away. Put that in your car. Don't bring it with you. All righty. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Victor from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Victor. What's your question?
Good afternoon, guys. This is kind of directed to Steve. I'm ready to buy a tablet, finally. Now, tell me why the iPad is allegedly much better than everybody else's. Sell it to me.
Well, put me on the spot here.
Hang you out to dry.
Yep. One of it is it's sort of the Apple ideals of fit and finish. It just feels right. It seems to work better. It's got a fast enough processor in it, and a lot of it is the App Store. There's almost a million apps that you can download. Almost anything available or anything imaginable is available. And it just I've played with the Nook tablet. I've played with the some of the Android tablets, and it's sort of what we say in the Mac world all the time over the years is that you can buy cheaper devices, but you can't buy an equivalent device cheaper. You look at a PC that has the same specs and the same build quality as a Mac, and you're running about the same price. Most of what we're seeing in the Android tablet world, you know, for $250, seven-inch tablets, or you get the Apple tablet, $400 for a 10-inch tablet. That it's got the bigger screen, got the better graphics, it more RAM generally. The other companies tend to cut corners to make that price cheaper, and that's been true in the PC world for years. You know, you can make it cheaper by cutting the build quality. A lot of times what you do, you go into the store and play with them all, and you just see how much more responsive the iPad is. You know, when you swipe to change pages, it just does. You know, there's no hesitation. We had a lot of interesting stuff on the first Kindle tablet that you swipe to change a page. It takes so long, you think it didn't work, so you swipe again, and then it changes two pages.
Now, what about this? You convinced me, first of all, for the iPad, but I've been reading a lot about this Android ice cream browser, I guess it is. What is that?
Ice Cream Sandwich is the latest version of the Android operating system. Whereas most companies put numbers, for example, OS 10, 10.2, 10.3, 10.4, what Google has done with Android is given it different dessert names, and the first letter is you know, so there was cupcake for C and donut for D and eclair for E, right? Froyo, frozen yogurt for F, gingerbread for G, H, honeycomb, and now we're up to I for ice cream sandwich. And so it's the I version of the operating
system.
What's
J going to be? Jelly bean?
Jelly bean is exactly what it's going to be.
Well, because right now the number, though, is what, 4? If you look at the Android.
Yeah, 4.0.3.
Well, that's one of the problems in
Is this going to 5 then?
Probably, because gingerbread was 3.0 point whatever.
Yeah. Okay. That's one of the problems in the Android world is what has been called fragmentation, that it's easy to buy an Android tablet. It's hard to buy a tablet with the latest operating system. That, in fact, we had a graph a few weeks ago that maybe I can find the link again, that you can buy a brand new phone, brand new tablet, and it's still coming with Android 2, not even 3 or 4.
Right. Yeah, and you got to go and update it.
If it's updatable, because sometimes the manufacturers haven't released updates based on their hardware yet.
And that's why we're very excited. Google has always had a good relationship with Samsung. I bought a Galaxy Nexus. It is a stock Android build. There's no extras in it at all. And, of course, Apple now owns Motorola. I have a story about that later. What did I say?
Apple.
No, Google owns Motorola. And we'll be seeing the definitive version of Android come out on their devices. So that should be pretty interesting. I have a Zoom tablet, and it's stock, and it's fast, and it's clean. I use it all the time.
Yeah, I've got my Android tablet, and I love the thing, you know, because I can throw it on the bike, so it doesn't take up much room.
Yeah, there are legitimate use cases for a smaller tablet.
Right,
I got my wife a Nook tablet for reading her books on.
Right, one of my minions got a Samsung Tab 2, I think. It's a 7-inch tablet from Samsung. And it's just hot. I love it. It's great. It's the right size. You can stick it in your pocket. You can take it everywhere. It's crisp and clean enough to view. I like the idea of a 7-inch tablet. My Nook is a 7-inch tablet. I use it for reading all the time. I would love to have an Android tablet that was 7 inches as well. We were looking at a couple of them yesterday. There's one that's was $79. And the only thing I really didn't like about it is it didn't have Bluetooth. But
for $79.
For $79.
That's almost an impulse buy.
Well, yeah, really. Right. And there was another one for $139. That essentially it had the same processor as the original, as the current iPad. It had the same screen as the iPad, but again, it and it had it only had 8 gig of RAM, but it had a 30. It had a mini SD card, mm-hmm. so micro SD card slot that would hold up to 32 gig. It was just a really nifty little box, and again, it did not have Bluetooth. So, but and I came this close to actually buying it, but I want. You know, I have a Bluetooth headset,
mm-hmm.
and I want Bluetooth on my thing. I don't know what this company has against...
That would have been an extra $5.
Well, Stida paid the extra $5, you know? I don't know what this company has against Bluetooth, but I'm telling you, I would have bought one. I would have owned one right now had it had Bluetooth.
Well, like I say, it could have been one of those oh ship moments that they realized that they forgot to put that in there. I mean, it happens. Oversights happen. Oversights happen, and it's like, oh, darn. But, you know, they're trying to cram so much in, putting 20 pounds in a 5-pound sack. But like I said, going back, I got a 9-inch Android tablet.
Right.
And I love it. One, because, like I say, I can throw it on the bike, and anybody knows me, I've got a Harley, and they are known for their vibrating capabilities.
Yes.
And but this Android tablet being so all solid state, it's perfect. It can get bounced around. You know, it's in a protective cover, but it can get bounced around, and it don't mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So, you know, it's great. And like I say, I go wherever I go, I can tie in free most places wirelessly.
Well, thank you very much, guys.
Yeah, have a good one.
Oh, I think we're off the air again.
Off the internet,
yeah. There's. Well, I was going to look it up. Asus is coming out with an Android tablet. It's supposed to be about $150. That has just everything in it, and so I'm waiting. We'll see.
Well, and that's part of the problem. There's always the waiting game. There's always going to be a better one coming, and so you jump in now and get a year or two or three use out of it, and then. By the time you're ready for another one, there'll be an even better one.
Right. Well, I would have honestly bought either the $79 one or the $139 one if it had Bluetooth.
Yeah.
Because why not? You know, if it's only good for a year, you still $79 for a year.
Yeah.
Who cares? Yeah. All right. So yeah. Buy the tablet you want. Buy it right now and enjoy it while you've got it because
it's fine.
And there's no, certainly, I'm not saying there's anything wrong. God knows there's nothing wrong with an Android, an iPad. There's nothing wrong with it.
One thing I did notice because of the way they set up my tablet, you know, it's got Google, but I try to get to the Google store and the app won't work right as far as downloading other apps. So I had to go over to Amazon. And the Amazon download app works fine, which, you know, now Amazon and Google are getting so much alike. I thought at first, oh, that's going to be an issue because I was getting ready to return it. And then I discovered the Amazon and a couple of the key apps that I wanted it for were available. Well, then that resolves that. It does everything else. I can, like I say, do my cloud computing. And that's what I had with me when I was talking about proving something to an individual. Yep. I was able to quick pull out the tablet and here you
go. Going back to code names, Apple's Mac OS has been notorious isn't quite the right word, using cats for their code name. The last version was Snow Leopard, current version is Lion. Everybody has code names, but they rarely make it to the public. The iOS code names are based on ski resorts. So the current one is Hoodoo.
Very nice. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour, and we are Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Mike. Nope, apparently we don't.
Mike gave up on us.
Sorry, Mike.
Try again, Mike.
It's my fault. I didn't mention that he was waiting on the line, and that's entirely my fault. I will read about Google Mobility while we're waiting for Mike to call back at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Google on Tuesday, completed its $12.5 billion acquisition. That's billion with a B. phone maker Motorola Mobility Holdings, Inc., and said it had appointed a Google executive as the new CEO of the business. It is Google's largest acquisition ever and pushes it deeper into cell phones. Google is already a formidable force in mobile computing thanks to its Android software, the chief challenger to Apple and its iPhones. At the same time, the acquisition is largely a defensive one. Google needs Motorola's trove of 17,000 cell phone patents to defend Android phones against lawsuits by Apple, which accuses them of copying iPhone features. Google and Motorola announced the deal last summer, expecting it would close late last year or early this year. But approval from Chinese regulators was slow in coming. Last Saturday, China approved the deal on condition that Android software would remain free for other phone makers for at least 5 years. Regulators in the U.S. and Europe had cleared the deal 3 months ago. The acquisition will also test Google's ability to keep its business partners, shareholders, and employees happy as it moves beyond internet search and other services built on software to begin manufacturing a wide range of equipment for the first time. Google's been reassuring its Android partners that Motorola's devices won't get souped-up versions of the software or receive other preferential treatment. Although it initially was drawn to Motorola Mobility for its patents, Google has been signaling recently that it has been drawing up more ambitious plans for Motorola Mobility. Besides producing smartphones and tablet computers, Motorola Mobility also makes cable TV boxes that could provide Google with a springboard for delivering more of its services, including advertising to living rooms. However, cable companies control the market for set-top boxes, and they may not like the intrusion into their realm. Motorola Mobility is one half of the old Motorola, Inc. It split at the beginning of last year. The other half, Motorola Solutions Incorporated, is still independent. It sells police radios, barcode scanners, and other products aimed at government and corporate customers. So, would you buy a phone direct from Google? Give us a call, 585, on whatever phone you have, sorry, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, toll free, 1-800-790-0415. One of the things that for we Google enthusiasts, we Android enthusiasts, one of the things we like about this Motorola buy is that we're pretty well guaranteed that any Motorola phone that comes out will have stock, original, pure Android on it. Mm-hmm. You know, Steve was talking about that earlier, how there's a fragmentation in the market. And he's absolutely right. It used to be that, it is today. If you buy an iPad, you get iOS. There's not a lot of question there.
Yep.
But with Android, some of them don't actually have the real Android market. Some of them have all kinds of extra bloatware.
You
got to
do
like
a little
that.
Research.
Yeah, and so you got to do your research and you got to play around with that. But there are a lot of versions that haven't been updated by everyone.
There's found the infographic by brand and how far behind they are, and
some
by
of them are
model
very far,
of the phone,
very
and how far,
far
behind they are. Yep.
That's why I went with the Samsung, because at the time I bought it, Galaxy Nexus was the flagship for Android, and it's stock Android, and it's fast and smooth and clean, and I love it. The one thing that I didn't like about some of the other phones I saw, they had better battery life and blah, 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 but they didn't have stock Android. A friend of mine has a phone that's got like 50 different programs on it, all of which are just simply in the way.
Mm.
You know, I just don't care about them. I don't want them. I'm not going to use them. And when you go to load them anyway, they say, oh, and you now have to buy the real version. Well,
no.
And you can't uninstall them because they're built into the ROM.
Yeah. Oh.
But that makes the phone cheaper because that company paid a little bit of money on the phone to get that program on the phone.
Hey, did you know that you can now pay Microsoft to take out all the bloatware they put in Windows?
Wasn't Sony doing that for a while? For an extra $100, they would sell you a computer with no crap on it.
Yep.
You ready?
I was born ready. All right, kiddies, gather round. Get your footy jammies on, grab a mug of hot cocoa, sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair, because if we can slap him awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave! That's the dynamo revving up, folks.
Oh, folks, you know what? I don't play a doctor on the radio, and I don't pretend to know how to perform surgery. I won't even try it. Sure, you can go to YouTube and see a lot of great things, and, oh, that looks like it could be a lot of fun to do. But some folks have to know, as Harry, Clint Eastwood did say, a person's got to know his limitations.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, putting together a computer can be, a blast. But you know what? There's this thing called RTFM. And if I have to explain it to you, I won't.
Read the manual first.
Yes. You know, and some folks just don't know when to stop their limitations. They think if they go, just a little bit more, they'll be able to straighten it out. Well, we got this computer in the shop. It's in parts.
I tried to take it apart myself. We don't.
Well,
how many times do you get a computer missing screws?
Well, this one was a liquid cooled one.
Ugh. Not anymore.
No.
Some assembly required. And if you don't know how to assemble it, maybe that should be your first indication. Oh, back off?
Holy nope,
moly. They went forging right ahead. Of course, when we have to call them up and say, you know that box of stuff that you dropped off and you attempted to do this?
That used to be a computer?
Did you realize that you did this wrong and it cracked this?
Yeah.
And now stuff's leaking all over the place?
Oh, really?
Did they try to deny it?
And that...
We get that a lot. No, my son didn't spill anything in the keyboard.
Yeah. And that $400 graphics card, just happened to be laying right underneath where the stuff was dripping down to.
Oh, yeah.
And there's this thing about electronics. Even though it's antifreeze dripping down on that, it's still a form of liquid. And computers, being that type, they don't like liquid, even antifreeze, going across them.
You can actually buy stuff that's non-conductive, but it's very much more expensive, and most people do not. If I were to have a liquid-cooled computer, I would insist on that stuff.
Well, no.
Even the cleaning solutions we apply, they say that they're they'll clean your circuit boards, and they're non-conductive,
right.
But they're highly flammable.
Yeah.
But see, this had, for the cooling of the CPU... It had two little right angles that had to be screwed in to the top of this mount. Well, when you're going to screw them in, and I was always taught when you're going to screw something in to make sure the threads are right, always go in backwards a little bit just so you can feel it go click.
So
click,
it seats.
And then start slowly twisting it and torquing it
down.
And
you work your way around all the screws. You don't screw one down tight and then do the
right.
other one.
Well, he was trying to put these two in. And one wasn't going in right, so he forced it, and it went in on an angle, which then cracked the housing, which is only plastic, thus causing leak.
Yeah.
So again,
if you don't know what you're doing inside there,
don't do it.
Don't do it.
It's like I say, I see some great stuff. There's videos out there on how to take your appendix out. Would I sit there and try to do it? No. I know my limitations. Or same with working even on my car. I'll take my car to my mechanic because he's got all the proper tools to do the job.
In fact, the average backyard mechanic these days can't work on their car because you need a computer diagnostic kit.
And here's
we were talking about that. My father-in-law used to work on his cars, and he got me working on my cars. And when I had a Volkswagen Beetle, I could do that. The next car I got had electronic this and ignition that and thing this and the other thing that. And one time I actually needed to pull off the fan. Well, I don't own a fan puller. And I'm not going to go out and buy a fan puller for the one time in my entire life I'm going to have to pull a fan.
Right.
I'm just not going to do it.
You know what? And here's the other key thing that I can't stress enough. Granted, it's going to cost you a little money to get, do it if you're really uncomfortable with it. But you know what? If that other company or where you're taking it screws things up and they don't do it right, then they're responsible.
Right.
They are then accountable. It's just like, if your car, you say the tappets and that, you don't need those adjusted. You mess them up, you can mess up the whole engine. But where if you go to your mechanic, he's got the proper tools, and if he messes it up, then it's on him.
That's right.
For doing something incorrectly.
That's right. And the thing is, everybody thinks that building a computer is so very simple. And you're right, it isn't rocket surgery, but it isn't ridiculously simple either. There's a lot of
things you
mechanics
gotta consider
involved, and there's a lot of knowledge involved, and there's a lot of skill involved.
Exactly. You know, and I mean, I've been doing this for what? I think 20,
way too long.
28 years now, I think I roughly figured it out.
That's right.
That we've been doing it. You know, going back into the 80s.
Well, and that's, and of course, a large part of it is the knowledge that you've gathered over the years.
83.
That's in no book. That's in no book anywhere.
83, 93.
Yeah.
30 years. I take that back. It was just, I got my first PC. It was in September of 83. Because before that, we were I was playing on the computers at Kodak. We had this big towered one that we had programmed in BASIC. And we had to, you know, again, feed a tape into it. And it was on for our off hours. It was a lunar landing module type of program that we played because we were working Sea Trek. And we programmed that in. We got
it
out.
It was a physics simulator.
We got it.
Yeah.
Well, it was a good test to make sure the computer was still up and running. Sure. Yeah, but it was after that. It was, like I say, it was September. Lori got me the computer for my birthday. And that was September of 83. So that's, now it'll be 30 years this September.
Yep.
That I actually had my own physical computer. And then that didn't. That was the PC. No, that was after. I got the PC Junior thereafter.
I really enjoyed the PC Junior.
That was a cute little machine.
That was a very cool little machine.
Of course, I tweaked her out because, as you know, once you got it, you had to add different things on,
right,
like the sidecar and all that. And she's heading off to Europe for 3 weeks. And here we just got in the machine 2 days before. I discovered that I could do this and this, and I ordered all these parts. So I had the whole thing apart on her dining room table. She comes out. Of course, she's getting ready to go. And so, what the hell is going on? What'd you do to it? I was just upgrading it. You just got it. I go, yeah, I know, and I got to upgrade it.
Yeah, right.
So she got to where she wouldn't bother answering. Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
It's just like every time my wife needs to buy another can of paint. You just painted the living room. Well, I don't like that color anymore.
You liked it then.
Right.
You don't need to buy any more paint. Yes, dear.
Yes, dear.
Yeah, but now you can get the sample cans. So you can try it.
Yeah, but those stupid sample cans are like $50 a gallon.
Yeah, by the time, you might as well just buy a gallon.
Which is, what, $12, $15?
Right, right. You must buy a couple of gallons and just paint the room. It's cheaper than the samples.
Yeah, because I just painted in my office and got rid of that one color that my wife used to love. It was a raspberry color.
I tell you, the one thing I never do is paint. My father had the same problem. Paint makes us nauseously ill. Violent headaches.
Oh, really?
Horribly sick to our stomachs. We cannot paint. When the house is being painted, I have to move out until the smell goes away. When they were painting my hall and at work, they painted the hall. I worked from home for 4 days.
Huh.
I cannot stand the smell. And I don't know what, my father was the same way. And we just cannot stand the smell of paint.
Oh, I mean, for me, it wasn't the paint that really got to us. I refinished the floor again in my office because it needed it. So I gave it 3 coats of polyurethane because I've got hardwood floors throughout my whole house, and I love them. But, yeah, I have
softwood floors. No.
I mean, well, I had the room empty.
I have Rochester floors in my house. The thin board.
You got gorgeous.
The narrow board. I have a gorgeous house.
Yeah, that's what I've got. The thin.
They're called Rochester floors, as a matter of fact.
Those are 3/4-inch boards.
Yep.
Because I had to go out and mill some down. Yeah, because I had to do a repair job up in my bedroom. Because when I pulled up the carpeting, there was the outline of the old closets. Because back in the day, you know, people only had little closets. And you compare that to the closet that I built.
Yep.
Which is huge. But back then, people didn't have big wardrobes.
Yep.
You know, they had a dresser and maybe a few items that they'd hung up in the closet. It wasn't big. So I had to repair that. And it was a 4-foot section wide in the whole width of the room where I had to repair it, but that was fun to do.
The closet in our master bedroom is not quite a walk-in closet, but it's an awfully big closet. So there you go. I knew you'd get there. All right, kiddies, that's it. Put your empty hot cocoa mugs in the sink. Get out of your footy jammies. We're going to give Uncle Dave a shot, put him back to sleep for another week, because that's the end of Story Hour with Uncle Dave.
Thank you. That was...
It is a great thing to build your own computer, but you're right. A man's got to know his limitations.
Yeah, I mean, I feel so bad for him.
And you may be handy with a screwdriver and other things, but and it's usually specialized screwdrivers in some of these computers. I've had to buy so many stupid little screwdrivers.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. One.
Computer problems. There we are.
Hit the wrong button. I meant to hit that one.
Oh, there we go. All right, we are going to take another break.
I slipped.
He slipped.
I slid out of the seat.
You know, when you get to a certain age...
I'm not putting Velcro to hold me on. Yeah. I draw the line certain places, you know?
We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 40 minutes after the hour, and we are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Joe from Cheektowaga, New York on the line. Welcome, Joe. What's your question?
Well, then, getting back to the copyright thing, I was reading this week that there was some guy that created a mayoral ad for his friend, composed the music, did the shoot and all that. So they stick this up on YouTube. And then Jay Leno happens to use it in a segment as one of his shows. And then sometime later, NBC Universal decides, oh, that's part of our content. We're going to ask to have that taken down. How about that? It's kind of like the Mega Upload case. Not even their material.
Right.
They just used it as a humorous piece, and all of a sudden they have some sort of right to take a YouTube video down like that?
Right. That's the problem with this thing now is that the problem is that you don't have to prove copyright. You only have to claim copyright. And then later on it gets proven, but by then the thing has already been taken down. All kinds of things have ensued. It used to be we had what used to be called innocent until proven guilty, and now I guess it's you own the copyright until somebody else proves that they own it instead. I don't know.
Well, it's almost like the SCO suit, too. It's basically a nuisance lawsuit. Oh, we think we have rights to this, so we'll just go hit some of the bigger players in that software space like IBM. I mean, it's the same thing with Verizon claiming SIP patents against Vonage. You know, they want damages.
I used to have...
What was the other one? Yahoo is suing Facebook, saying Yahoo invented social networking because they have a patent for, in essence, people putting information on a web page.
Yeah, right. I used to run an FTP site for old-time radio shows. Thousands and tens of thousands of people downloaded
good.
My stuff. In fact, you'll see some people selling my stuff now. But I used to get, and I know all of it was off copyright because I checked, except this one guy, beg your pardon, this one guy kept sending me email threatening to sue me because he owned the copyright to The Shadow. And I consistently wrote back to him and said, I'll tell you what, you prove you own the copyright and I'll be happy to take it down. So he would threaten me with lawsuits and threaten me with this and with that and threaten me with the other thing and the other thing. Every time I wrote back, and I would always say, just show me the proof and I will take it down. And of course, he had no proof. He never had the proof, but he got a lot of sites to take a lot of stuff down because he threatened them, and I just wasn't going to roll over.
But he was selling it and thought you were a threat?
He was selling it, right. And of course, he couldn't sell it because I was giving it away.
Were you ever served?
No, he had no copyright. He didn't own it.
Of course.
And so he couldn't
but
serve
he,
me.
He could try, nonetheless. I mean, haul you into court just for, you know, his fun of it.
Yes,
I mean,
he
not
could.
Yours.
But then he would lose because he didn't own the copyright, and then I would countersue for harassment because I had, like, by that time, 50 emails from him. for harassment and illegal takedown and whatever else, mopery, anything I could get my hands on.
Mm-hmm.
And so he never came after me. I stood up to him, and he backed down. So he had nothing. He had no leg to stand on.
Oh, it sounded like maybe you took it down because of this guy. Boy, that would be a tragedy, hey?
No, yeah, it would be, but I didn't. I took it down.
Terabytes a day.
A day. RIT finally asked me to take it down. They said, you're using a lot of data. I said, no, I'm not. They showed me I was actually sending out about 7 terabytes of data every single day. This from a 486 on a 10-meg video card, a 10-meg Ethernet card. But it was running constantly. I mean, it was running full out, and it was about 7 terabytes a day of data. And they certainly had the right to tell me not to shoot that out
there
anymore.
Yeah, just a little bit.
So I took it down. But, I was, it was all, I told them I was doing it. They knew I was doing it. It was all perfectly legal because none of it was copyrighted material. But, I've got hundreds and hundreds of CDs. Some were given to me by people, God bless them. Some people, some I downloaded from. There's lots of places nowadays that you can download old-time radio shows anyway. But they limit you to so many megs a day or so many megs a month or whatever. So,
Archive.org is a nice site for a lot of old radio shows and things that have fallen out of copyright. Yeah.
And there's the old-time, OTRR, old-time radio. I can't remember what the other R stands for. Could be, yes. And these are the people who really do it right. They go back and find all the old shows they can. They put all kinds of information on the CDs. They do everything right. And then they hand them around to other members to copy and to fix. And so they make sure that they're all perfect. Stuff that I just never had a lot of time to do. And, of course, the Cobalt Club is still running. That was what I originally called my site, but now it's been taken over by some other folks who are running it just as a club for old-time radio enthusiasts.
Well, if all you're doing is to look to distribute this sort of stuff because you love it and it's perfectly legal to distribute it, I would think about making some sort of static image and then add it as a video, throw it up on YouTube. YouTube will certainly distribute it for you for free.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And there's a couple other places that'll do the same, and I've
7 terabytes a day.
But it's 7 terabytes yeah. a day. Well, at that time, there wasn't anybody else doing it. Now there's lots of other people doing it, lots of other places you can download it for free. Like you said, archive.org, there's several old-time radio sites that are doing it. It isn't something I need to do anymore, since I can't find a place to do it for free in terms of bandwidth, can you imagine paying for 7 terabytes a day of bandwidth? I couldn't afford it. But yeah, you're right. There's lots of places that will serve you a copyright notice thinking that they own it. And I'm sure that, the Leno people, NBC or whichever station he's on, didn't really do it maliciously. What happened was some lawyer had seen the show, then found this site and said, oh, my God, they have our stuff.
Mm.
Right? And so he did it, and then before it got all straightened, I hope it got straightened out. But, yeah, I understand that. I do.
And on another subject, you were talking about building computers before. I haven't done that in over a decade now. But I did really like to do this, and I desperately need to build myself one again. And I was going through the tech specs for the Intel Core.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, because I was looking for thermal design, how hot can I let this thing get? Turns out they designed these things to only be inserted into a socket 15 times. I was blown away at how little that is.
Yeah. Yeah, they assume once you put it into the socket, you're never taking it out again.
And if they can make the pins that much thinner times 100 million pins, then that's a lot of money.
Yep.
Well, yeah. And, well, here's the thing. I remember, at least from a few years ago when you were on another station, you were saying that integrated graphics are a bad idea.
Well, they're cheaper.
If you notice the Sandy Bridge and the Ivy Bridge Intel chips, they have integrated graphics. Would you still recommend getting a dedicated GPU card and put
Well, I never said they
computer.
Were a bad idea in and of themselves. I said they weren't high-end graphics. So if all you really want, for example, if you own a server, you're never going to play a game on that server. Integrated graphics are fine for that. If you've got
for
a
casual gaming too,
for, yeah. even for casual gaming. But if you want a real high-end system with a decent set of you know games that you're going to be playing, or online games that you're going to be playing, or you know, God forbid, you have to get into Facebook and do Frontierville or Castleville or whateverville, you want higher-end graphics for those things. Just because it has a graphics card, what it really means is you can show something on the screen. It's not actually high-end graphics card.
And the graphics chips built in inside the CPUs these days are getting pretty good. But the bigger problem with them is that they share memory with your main memory. They don't have their own dedicated memory. So that makes them a little bit slower, but it does make them cheaper. And we are seeing, because of the proliferation of these onboard graphics, a lot of game companies are starting to support them a little more with their games. You know, you wouldn't want to play Diablo 3 on a built-in graphics, you know, shared, you know, memory system, but you know, you can play Angry Birds and that would probably be fine.
Yep. Yep.
Well, yeah, my use case would be more along the line of being able to play full high definition video off a Myth TV or something like that.
Then you really want a dedicated graphics card. You want to be able to do high def video, 1080p stuff, 1900 by 1080p, and things like that. So you certainly want a high-end graphics card. There's no question of that.
Oh, okay. So I'm probably consider spending the money for a dedicated GPU card. Oh,
yep. Sorry.
It's only money, right?
That's all. What else are you going to do with it? All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Joe. Appreciate it. We are done for another week. You've wasted 2 solid hours of your life sitting here listening to us. I have no idea why, but thank you for doing it. We are done for another week. I want to thank everyone who called in. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. I want to thank whoever restarted the Ethernet, the network here, except I think it's off again. Yeah, it's off again, so we may lose the last call off our list. We want to thank you. Thanks, everybody, on the IRC chat and on the YouTube stream, which kind of went down, and of course lots of people listening on the live audio stream. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. We are Sound Bites, and we are right here every week on member supported Jazz 90.1. Thanks for listening.